The issues the Cosby Show addressed by presenting a sympathetic black family, highly educated and enviably prosperous, have been very real for this age group. Just about all the 30-year-olds we spoke with talked about an old way of seeing racial difference and their way. James Williams grew up in Pittsburgh, and like many other black 30-year-olds, when he was a youngster, he was bussed.
I went to a grade school in Mount Lebanon, which was called, I believe it was Linden. I was the only black kid. It was just an education for everyone, from first grade all the way to the principal. You would get racial slurs and all that kind of stuff, just getting off the bus, walking to class, and people were distant at first. And then by the time I was ready to go on to middle school, it was like I was the class president. You know, once they got to know me, aside from looking at my skin complexion, and once they got to really know me as a person, everyone became friends. I have some friends to this day that I went to grade school with out there.
My experience is a little different. I didn't get bussed until the 80s in my middle school. We were mixed with, I think, half of the school. We only had 250 kids, half are white, half are black. We had never interacted other than that before. So we set this whole new standard. Everything was, I won't say everything was happy-go-lucky, but there really weren't any race tensions. Some of my best friends are from those days.
That's Jock Baines. Like James Williams, he works at Manchester Bidwell Corporation, a community arts center in Pittsburgh. James Williams handles business affairs for one of the center's nonprofit subsidiaries. Jock Baines teaches ceramics. Another of their 30-year-old colleagues, Rebecca Arena, is white and teaches baking.
I've seen a lot of diversity that we did not have before. Not to bring up my daughter, but even when I, as a mother, looking for daycare, I will never forget this. I looked and they said there were 75% white people. And I said, I'm sorry, you can't help us. I said, I cannot bring my daughter up in 75% white people. That's not how it is in the world.
My name is Beatrice Chow. I was born on February 10th, 1971, in New York City. I think as a Chinese American, a lot of African Americans and Latinos, they lump themselves together as people of color, and seldom do they include people of Asian descent. I'm not in the majority group, but I think the minority group didn't see us as minorities either.
Beatrice Chow does international marketing for Sesame Street, where sunny days were always marked by racial harmony, even when the news told of violent anti-busing protests. Diversity, for her and many of her contemporaries, seems to be genuinely more than a slogan or a political pose, which isn't to say it's a rosy, simplistic view of race relations. Katrina Schwarz is a graduate student of public health, a veteran of the Peace Corps who says she fled corporate employment as a chemical engineer.
I think we have an even harder battle. It wasn't about where you sat on a bus. But with us, it's just underlying, I feel like, all the time. It's this lightly veiled racism that is so hard because you can't just, it's not tangible. A lot of us in my generation don't want to see it, and they're very happy that it's veiled.
I'm Becky Serafini, and I was born on August 17th, 1971.
Becky is a marketer with Heinz Foods. She says diversity isn't only a matter of justice. It makes life richer and work more effective.
The variety makes up, you know, a better end product. When you've got people that are all different, you know, mixing their ideas together, you get a better end result. I mean, even with a lot more women in the workplace, women have a really different approach to business than men. And in all of the diverse cultures and everything that you're seeing in the workplace now, I think it just really, really enhances a business or a person's life when you have all these friends and people you know with just completely different experiences. It just makes it so much more interesting.
Some of these ideas were once asserted in the heat of what was called a culture war. For these 30-year-olds, the rightness of them today is clear and uncomplicated. Hearing from so many 30-year-olds, interviewing them at length, letting them tell their stories, was not an exercise in social science. It was a reminder of how seldom we hear from 30-year-olds on the air, if they're not musicians or athletes. As a rule, they're not old enough to run things or to be great authorities. But soon they will be. And one of them, Pittsburgh artist Abby Franson Sheehan, who works at the Warhol Museum and has two children, made an interesting forecast about her contemporaries.
I think our generation has grown up, at least in terms of my sphere, with everything I ever needed. So I don't have that American dream of having to rise to more. And I think that that's created this whole century. more, do better than your parents did. And I think that our generation doesn't need to do better than our parents did. And so maybe things that will be characteristics of us are really choosing what we want to do and being happy with what we have.
Our Fellow 30-Year-Olds was produced by Sarah Sarrazin, mixed by Bill Deputy, and recorded by M.E. Zuba. Production help from Darcy Bacon and Jim Lesher. For more about our 30th anniversary, see our website at www.npr.org.